then hold your head, son, it only take a second.
Check it out now.
People, come on, while I wreck it, like I said, hold your head, son, it only take a second.
Check it out now.
People, come on.
Welcome to the Rice and Ricky Sanchez podcast. I'm Spike Eskin, along with Liberty Baller's own, America's favorite son, Mike Levin.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, America's favorite son. This is like the good old days during the week, early in the morning for you.
Oh yeah.
Well, you're working.
Pretty early.
You're working. You have a job again, yeah?
Start on Monday.
Oh, this coming Monday. Oh well, good luck, buddy.
Thanks, man.
Starting a new job is always exciting and also weird.
Yeah, we had like a meeting. It's a new show on Fox with Rob Lowe and Fred Savage. Should Ooh. Be fun.
Fred Savage, I met him once when I was working in Chicago. Somebody didn't know who it was and kicked him out of his studio. We sat him in there to wait, and somebody whose studio it was came in. He was like, hey, dude, could you get out of here? Kick Fred Savage right out of this. You know, I think Wonder Years is a funny show because, you know, I'm older. It was in its prime when I was that age, like the correct age to be watching The Wonder Years, 14 or 15 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
He was it was speaking to me, and I thought...
Mm-hmm.
At the time, and still in retrospect, it's one of the best shows I've ever seen. But when I watch it now, it's amazing how it doesn't. I don't even get the what's the word I'm looking the nostalgia enjoying it feeling. I don't really enjoy it the same at all. Like, not even close to the way I enjoyed it when I watched it in the first place. I still think it's great, but it doesn't. I don't know if it didn't age well or if it's the fact that I'm not that age anymore. But I don't enjoy it the same way.
Interesting. I feel like most people feel the opposite.
Yeah.
That it still makes it, because like the music and like the acting, it just feels like from a very different time, and that gives you the nostalgia. But all right, it's fine.
Yeah. So on the show today, we will have Ricky O'Donnell, the college basketball editor at SBNation.com.
Ricky on the Ricky.
Very first Ricky we've ever had on the Ricky. And dare I say, the last Ricky until we have the Ricky on the podcast. I'm stating it right now.
I think so.
We're never having another Ricky until we get Ricky Sanchez.
Okay, I can get behind that.
I can throw down that gauntlet. So we'll talk.
Yeah.
We'll talk about the draft with him, the upcoming NBA draft, and we'll talk about maybe some, you know, late first, second round sort of prospecty guys, and then we will beat into the ground the Russell versus Moutier thing and every other thing that we will continue to beat into the ground until June 25th. If you're all right with that.
I am very all right with that. Is your board shifting a lot? A lot of moving and shaking?
There is some board shifting. I'll get to it in a minute. I wanted to touch on a couple of non-draft things before we get to my shifting board. Is your board shifting?
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Always. Consistently. Like tectonic plates. I'm out in L.A., so we have all the shifting.
Yeah, I saw the previews for that movie. It looks like the shifting could be pretty extreme. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Me and The Rock are shifting all over the place.
Yeah, just flying in helicopters. Say everyone's dying except for his daughter or whatever. So everything ends happy as long as he saves his niece. So the show, in case you didn't know, The Rice of Ricky Sanchez now has a Twitter at. It is run by our intern, Philip. That is at RTRS Podcast. I saw you smack down Philip a little bit last night. You weren't happy with Philip's tweet.
Listen, he's got to just stay in his lane a little bit.
Yeah. I think the problem is we haven't really established to Philip what his lane is.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
It was like you told him he jumped the shark. I was like, what shark? I didn't even. Poor Philip. So Philip will answer your questions about the podcast. He will tweet out when the new ones are out, of course, and he will collect the questions so we're not annoying you on our Twitter feeds with collecting the questions. So that is at RTRS Podcast. You can also get all the podcasts as well to catch up on them at RightsToRickySanchez.com. There you go.
Yeah.
RightsToRickySanchez.com is an actual thing. It's not really a thing, but if you go there, you'll get the podcast. It's the same place you always get the podcast, but...
Is it Rights to Ricky Sanchez or The Rights to Ricky Sanchez?
Just RightsToRickySanchez.com.
Okay.
RightsToRickySanchez.com. So, great. I was pretty proud of myself. So, last night, what happens normally with the NBA Finals, because I get up so early and I'm old, and these games start. First of all, thank you to the NBA for, it said that the start time was 9 o'clock and the start time was actually 9:08. I feel like most times they say the start time is 9 o'clock and it's not until 9:47 or something. There's like 18 Flo Rida songs and then 17 sections with Doug Collins. So it started pretty quick. But I was convinced I was going to be asleep by halftime, and I stayed up for the whole game. So I was pretty excited and proud of myself. Yeah.
And also very worth it because it was a pretty good game.
Yeah, it was a great game. It was, to me, it was one of those games where you saw how well LeBron started out and how poorly the Warriors started out. And even though the numbers don't really suggest that Stephen Curry was pretty invisible, he felt pretty invisible for a lot of the game. You know, it felt like they were doing a good job on him. He wasn't open a lot. A lot of his like fancier stuff wasn't working. Yeah. First of all, one of the reasons I love watching Steph Curry is that he does not play as if this game is any more important than any other game. Like, he is still the same like playgroundy, you know, fancy pass stuff he does. But
yeah,
the
for all the times that like he does, he makes a fancy pass that like looks incredible, he makes one that's like, oh, well, that didn't really work out.
Yeah. And he doesn't care. Like, it doesn't seem to stop him or affect him in any way. But as I'm watching this game and the Cavs are playing seemingly so well, there was never a time except for in that first quarter where they were ever up by a significant margin. Like, watching it the entire time, I always just sort of expected the Warriors to win. And what worries me, I would love to have like six games like that last night, but what worries me is that it, not what worries me in general, because I thought the Cavs would win, I thought the Warriors would win in five or six games. Like, it seemed to me like that's what was going to happen. But When LeBron turns in a game like that and they still lose, it sort of makes me worry that game two, the Warriors could win by 38 points or something, you know?
Yeah, I mean, listen, LeBron shot 18 for 38, so it wasn't like he was playing out of his mind. Like, he can play better basketball than that. And you usually get more out of J.R. Smith and Tristan Thompson. So it's not like the Cavs played the best game they could possibly play and it just didn't work out. I'm worried about Kyrie. Have they said anything about it? I just woke up, so I don't know anything.
No, I think what's sort of interesting is there is a bubbling narrative about, or a real story about, that the Cavs do not think, like, have told him that there is no structural damage to his knee prior to this, and that he can't do any more damage, that it's about like pain management pretty much. And I guess there was a fight between Kyrie Irving's dad as his agent, and there was an argument between David Griffin and the Cavs GM and Kyrie Irving's dad after one of the Hawks games where he hurt himself, that I guess there was a sort of a screaming match outside of the locker room. And the sense that I get is that, and I heard Brian, I think it was Windhorst, said it, is that the feeling around the Cavs, it is more about Kyrie Irving is worried about his knee, that he's never had a knee injury before, and less about an actual injury. Now, I'm not here to question hurts or whether you should play through an injury or not play through an injury, but it seems like up until this point, it's been more about pain management than it has been about that something is preventing him from, you know, that they're worried about him doing further damage. But there hasn't been anything more. It didn't look too bad what happened last night. You know,
no, it didn't.
Yeah. So hopefully he's able to play. The thing about LeBron right now is, and I'm a huge LeBron fan, enormous, have been for years, is that he can't, the odds of him, I know his supporting cast is not very good comparatively. Like, the Cavs are nowhere near as good, I think, top to bottom, as the Warriors are. But the odds of him being able to beat them by himself are like slim to none. Like, he's been there before. You can't beat a team like this like that. Maybe one game you can, but not four times in seven games. So he's better off not shooting 38 times and hoping that somebody else gets it going, I think, and becoming an actual team, than him trying to do it himself. I thought it was interesting that they wouldn't double team him in the post, that they just sort of let him score 2 points every time and, you know, maybe took that part of the game away. You know, I don't know. It was an interesting game to watch. I thought strategically it was an interesting game to watch.
Yeah, I loved Maurice Spates coming in and shooting 8 times in the 8 minutes that he played.
Yes.
I love that.
It was the most Maurice Spatesian 8 minutes as it could be. I mean, it was very Mo Spates, yeah. And fucking Iggy just, dude, if there was a guy on that floor that looked like he was playing calm and in the pocket and under control, it was Iguodala. Yeah. He was great.
Yeah. I mean, he had to take that one pull-up jumper, which was just totally ill-advised and missed by a mile.
Yep.
And I was like, good. It's good to see that you're still you.
Yes.
Because if he changed too much, it'd be like, come on, buddy. Like, what happened all that time before? But now he's still that guy. But he's sort of massaged himself into this, like, you know, he's really a role player there. And did you see the quote after the game that he talked about Aaron McKee?
No. I didn't see that at all.
Yeah, he talked about Aaron McKee and like how like coming up in the Sixers organization, like McKee was just talking to him about defense and he's never going to be – he's not the guy that has to dominate the ball scoring and all that. So he had tipped it to McKee. It was pretty cool.
He said – it was a funny quote. I forget – in a pre-series interview, he said that they have to win a ring so he doesn't kill Steve Kerr for making him come off the bench. Or so he said, so I don't have to beat Steve Kerr's ass for making me come off the bench or something like that. I love Iguodala. I love Iguodala, and I love that people some people still cheer against him because it will make it – I feel like those people are the same people that hate LeBron, so it creates this really unfortunate situation where they don't know who to cheer for in these games.
People actively currently still cheer against Iguodala?
They do. Not as many as like McNabb or something, but – They do.
Dude, Philadelphia is weird, man. Like, I have a good hold on it from being there and what it's like, but like, this doesn't make any sense. Like, what? Why do they blame this? I mean, I don't even blame Ryan Howard for Ryan Howard being bad.
You know what
it's not his fault.
You know what it is, though? I don't think it is specific to Philadelphia. I think some of it is, but I think mostly is that people need a person from an era that they can blame, by and large. You know, like he is just representative of an era, and his personality, even though he is a super nice guy and I think a good person and always worked hard and all those things, he was sort of like, he wasn't a great media guy. He wasn't like Charles or Iverson. Both, by the way, people conveniently forget that everyone here wanted to run out of town toward the end. Like, everybody was sick of Iverson's act and sick of Barkley's act too. It's not I just think he's for most people, he is representative of an era that was a failure, and he never really did anything in particular to connect to people. It sort of reminds me, in a less negative way, but sort of like Scott Rolen. Abreu to a lesser extent, but like Scott Rolen was a really good player when he was here, but the Phillies were shitty.
There's all those guys that are very good players that just never like got over the hump because the management was bad and didn't surround them with players that could actually make a difference.
Yeah.
So that's not, I don't know, blame Billy King. Blame...
Yeah, but they're not players, you know. I think a lot of times, just like people blame, you know, like there was a defense on the field for every one of the Eagles' failures, you know, in the playoffs. You know what I mean? Like, for some reason, Brian Dawkins is a winner and Donovan McNabb isn't, and I don't know why. Brian Dawkins never won anything more than Donovan McNabb did, but, you know, it is what it is. People pick up.
What's the Foles line where he left the field with a win?
Oh, yeah, left the field with a lead. Which, by the way, so did Donovan McNabb against the Cardinals, but no one ever remembers that part of it. Yeah. Fucking Foles.
I've always been big. Huge on Donovan. My dog's name is Donovan. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that. That's good. I was trying.
My dog's name is Donovan.
My wife and I are adopting a dog from Aruba. They have like a horrible stray dog problem there, so we're getting a dog and we're getting one from there. Yeah, but we were trying to figure out a name, and I had her really, really close to naming it Andre and calling it Dre after Iguodala because she likes him. So we're close, but I don't know if she's in on it. So
do you have the dog?
No, we don't have it yet. We're waiting until after we move and we have a place for the dog, have a yard and all that.
Yeah,
kind of
listen, you guys, You either go. You either have to go Philadelphia Sports Athlete for a dog or a middle name of your kid. Like that, those. It's gotta, yes. You got to do something. So maybe you go like Jeremiah for the dog. Maybe a little like Hugh.
No.
Wayne Gomes, possibly.
It has to be a Philadelphia athlete or just an athlete that I like.
Philadelphia athlete. Come on.
Yeah.
It's not gonna be anywhere from Syracuse. You know that, Spike.
My mom would
say that for the first one.
I kind of had plans on giving my son's middle naming him after John Starks, but that's a whole different podcast.
Okay, so. I'll allow John Starks.
Yeah. A really quick thing also about how awful Twitter is, just in general. I woke up to a conversation this morning, like that it was including me, and the origin of the conversation was LeBron sucks, just ask Spike and Ike Reese. And I was like, and then the reply to it was from some fucking Philadelphia handicapper guy, and he was like, well, two guys that have obviously never played basketball before. And I was like, yo, what the fuck? Like, what is going on here? First of all, when did I love LeBron James. Second of all, why are we jumping to, like, I never played basketball before? And by the way, the other guy was a professional football player. Like, Twitter is the worst place on earth. Is the number one worst place on earth. It's horrible.
I love it.
I hate it.
But yeah, I don't think Cleveland's dead. I mean,
no, they're dead.
James Jones played 17 minutes and didn't score a point. Like, that shouldn't happen. First of all,
Play 17 minutes in the finals.
No, he shouldn't play 17 minutes in a preseason.
Yeah, but they have to. They don't have any choice.
Listen, Joe Harris should be on the court. If you remember what Joe Harris did to the Sixers a couple times this year, you want to see Joe Harris play.
I don't know what they're thinking.
Sean Marion, no Mike Miller. We're going 17 minutes of James Jones.
Well, you know what? And part of this is LeBron's fault, because the reason that James Jones, Sean Marion, Mike Miller are on the Cavs is because LeBron wanted them, and like those are comfort zone guys for him. But clearly, they're all cooked. Like, they can't play anymore. Like, given what kind of a player Sean Marion is, like, he is sort of a Draymond Green before Draymond Green. Like, he's super versatile. He can guard threes and fours, and he can hit an open three and all that. If he can't even get on the court, then he's cooked. Like, these guys are cooked, you know? And they fill the roster with guys that LeBron is comfortable with, but those guys are cooked. They can't play anymore.
I mean, imagine if they didn't get Mozgov and Shumpert and Smith.
Like,
who would be on the team right now? Would you have to play for the Cavs?
I might. You never know. Yeah. You never know. Yeah. I'd have to take a vacation day.
You're comfort food for LeBron, too. I think he'd be like, oh, Spike's here. Yes. Okay, good.
He's always supported me. How about Mozgov just dunking on guys last night? Mozgov was good.
I love that.
Yeah. I said he was like that scene in The Waterboy where Adam Sandler is a mad guy that hates him, like the bad coach on everybody's face as he tackles him. Like all the everybody was Blake Griffin. Like, everyone had Blake Griffin's head on him. So
what a great reference. What a very old, obscure, perfect reference.
Yeah. So, all right. We got 10 minutes before we get Ricky O'Donnell on. So why don't we talk about our big boards?
I wanted to say before we got into that.
Yeah.
I emailed you while you were on vacation in Seattle. Did you have a good time, by the way?
I had a great time. Go to Seattle at some point.
Love Seattle.
Don't live there unless you're super fucking cool. But we went to this place called the Five Point. I don't know if you've ever been there. Five Point Cafe, great dive bar, awesome jukebox. Like, had a great time.
I think I was there. I think I did go there. Was that in, like, Capitol Hill?
No, it was in Belltown, I think.
Okay. Yeah. Did you see Spencer? Did you guys happen to see?
Did not
each other
see Spencer. Did go to Sean Kemp's bar. Is Sean Kemp's?
Yeah.
He wasn't there, so we left in like 4 seconds.
Yeah. I went to Sean Kemp's bar too. It's great. Anyway, this is, if you count.
Oh right.
Only, if you count only the rights to Ricky Sanchez's, which we've called it the rights to Ricky Sanchez, and we've had Dana Barris's intro music, which I think is officially the full Ricky.
Right.
This is our 76th Ricky.
Oh, come on. Come on. Congratulations on the 76th Ricky. And, of course, we're having a Ricky. Hey, ladies and gentlemen. Wait, that's the wrong thing. Hold on. We have to say again that it's the 76th Ricky.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is your 76th rights to Ricky Sanchez.
There you go.
Thank you.
Crowd going wild.
Thank you.
That's amazing. We've lasted 76 76 episodes and getting more popular by the day.
I was wondering what it was, and I was like, I'm going to count. And so I counted. And the first one, I listened to the one where it was like, where it was us deciding, we decided on the name. And I was like, okay, this is our name. If you don't know it, then you don't need to know it. Then Google it or something.
Yep.
We're not going to tell you.
Nope. Yeah, that's 76. That's amazing. Yeah, it's been around two years. 2 years, and our the traffic on the. Thank you for everyone who listens. Thank you for listening, because it seems to be getting more popular by the day. I think they can say so.
I think I'll throw Philip a bone. I feel like Philip's helping us out on that.
Talking
to the fans,
posting it on message boards and whatnot. I heard he's finding new Sixers fans for us, and perhaps some people that aren't even Sixers fans, so
maybe like chat rooms. He's going to chat rooms and talking to people.
Yeah. He's big into chat rooms. I think he still has his Prodigy account.
That's huge.
So here's my problem with my big board is that I have become very unsure of everyone. My Hazonia love, while I still have him number one, has been a little tempered by his frighteningly low free throw rate. And like it has been a little tempered, and I've also started to get nervous after reading Danny Chow's thing on Kristaps Porzingis, that like no matter what happens, whether they trade down, they're getting fucking Kristaps Porzingis. And though he might be good at some point, I gotta tell you, he's like the one, him and. And I'm sorry, Kristaps Porzingis. I'm sorry. But him and Okafor are the two guys, Okafor more, that I am going, if we walk away with that, that's the guy, I think I'm going to have a heart attack. Yeah.
Here's the thing. Do you think that you'd like him more if his name wasn't Kristaps Porzingis?
100%. Yes.
So if his name was like Ray Booth, you would like him better?
Well, Ray Booth, I don't know. Yeah, maybe. And if he didn't look so much like Sean Bradley.
He doesn't. He's a handsome young man.
He looks so much like Sean Bradley.
I'm not worried about Hazonia's free throw rate. I mean,
it's so low.
Not to the point you are. Yeah. But just because of the way that they play over there,
sure.
That he's really like trying to fit into, like it'd be like worrying about Jody Meeks's low free throw rate, like on the he wasn't like that if he's playing the Jody Meeks role basically. Like,
well, here's my worry, I guess, is that it leaves us, and maybe we get somebody else. You know, like this is not the he doesn't have to be everything, but it still leaves you with the need for another like perimeter creator. Scorer guy. Like if he's not the guy at all, then you know. Like,
I think he is a go to the rim guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I think he is that guy. I don't think Justice Winslow is any more of that guy.
Okay.
Justice has because he's stronger at this point, and he takes a very straight line. But I don't really look at it like Winslow can get to the rim and Hazonia can't. Like. Hazonia's probably more athletic.
Yeah.
And a better ball handler at this point.
I don't know if he's a better ball handler. Do you think?
Than Winslow, yeah, I would say.
My eye test tells me no, but my eye test is obviously very brief and only on YouTube.
I think you watch clips on YouTube and you're like, and the game looks slower.
Yes, it does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That might be my primary concern with Dario Saric. And that's Seamus Clancy's biggest issue with me is that I'm just like, he just looks slow.
Yeah.
And the guys covering him look like members of Liberty Ballers.
Yep.
And I'm just like, I don't think that it's going to translate, but maybe once you just put it in high definition, it just looks faster and better. I don't know.
Well, I think part of the problem, at least with watching college highlights, is that everyone is slower. You know, like everyone is slower and less athletic than what I'm used to watching. So it just looks like a clusterfuck. Like every time I watch college highlights, I'm like, why is everyone so close together? You know what I mean? Like I'm just so used to watching it all where the good teams are so spread out and they're like running the right kind of offense and everybody is sort of a plus athlete. Even the guys who are average athletes are plus athletes sort of. And so I think all of those highlights just look sort of like bumbling to me. So that I'm still like, and I've become, I think, a little more scared of Moutier than I was before.
You're scared of everybody now.
Yeah, I'm in a bad place, I think.
Who are you not scared of?
I'm scared of Towns. And Towns.
Is Towns now number one on your board?
No.
He still has done it.
No. I don't. I've taken the like normal casual fan route of not wanting another big guy too, because I don't.
Yeah.
I don't want to trade anybody. Like, I'm in a bad place. I'm sorry.
This is the early June swoon.
Yeah.
I think is what it's called.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I'm just trying to be like, more than anything, I try to be honest on when we do this. And if we're being honest, I'm petrified of everybody, and I'm scared we're going to take some big guy.
I would be scared if I had to make the decision, but I'm very happy that I don't.
Yeah.
That's what like this new Sixers era has become. It's like, look at all the options. We have so many options, and like kick back and let the guy who's smarter make the call.
We were talking about this a couple of weeks ago. I sometimes wonder if this is the time when I really get tested. I haven't been tested yet. Like if they take Okafor and they don't make any trades, I feel like he's testing me. Like that is the test, you know? Like this could be the draft where I'm like, I walk away and I'm like, oh boy. My trust in the process will be tested, I feel like.
Yeah, that's a really like biblical way of looking at things. No, I'm so in, dude. It's just gonna be like, yeah, I'm fine. Yeah, Willie Cauley-Stein, done. In, let's go. I'm really excited for the draft, man.
I'm excited too.
We're under 3 weeks away.
I'm pretty fired up. I'm gonna have my new 60-inch TV and my Sonos play bar and my fucking
nice
big old couch in my house. I'm gonna be. Hopefully we get this guy Stefan, who was a intern at WIP, came over to my house last year for the draft, but his mom made this buffalo chicken dip that was outstanding. So I think we got to get Steph. And his dad works for Mars, the company, which like puts out combo. So he brought the combos with the vanilla frosting to my house before they were even on the market.
That's huge.
Yeah, it was huge.
So wait, quick thing about the Sixers draft party.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I saw that.
Are you gonna go?
No. I don't want to be with other people, like a lot of other people, for the draft.
Yeah.
You know,
I agree.
And especially after being at the Eagles draft party, which was a cool event, but when if they do something like take Porzingis or something, I don't want to be around other people. Like I want to be able to brainwash myself. I'm not going to need a bunch of people booing and eating in line for free buffet food. I'm glad the Sixers are having it. It looks like a cool party, but I want no parts of it.
I sort of want no one to come. I mean, maybe that's still like this underdog that I have over here. If we're like, we're throwing the party for you and you guys, whatever.
Yeah. You want us to be the only ones that can throw a party.
Yeah. Hey, parties are our thing. Okay. I think we kind of got parties covered.
Yeah. Yeah. Why don't you guys build the team?
A brunch or like a luncheon, but like parties are our thing.
How about you guys get the players and we'll build the parties, okay, Sixers?
stick to drafting.
Yeah.
Okay, guys.
Stick to tanking. We'll stick to parties. All right. All right. Do you want to get Ricky O'Donnell, SB Nation's Ricky O'Donnell, on the podcast?
Yeah.
All right. Woohoo. Skype. Let's see if this works.
Hello.
Oh, there he is. You're on the podcast.
How exciting.
Yeah.
Hey, Ricky. Hey, buddy.
Well, I just want you to know there's no like lead-in. You're actually on the podcast right now.
Awesome.
Yeah. So we have Ricky O'Donnell, who is college. Wait, I had it written down. Your official title is college basketball editor for SBNation.com. And you're and what does NBA assignment editor mean? Do you just tell people what to write?
Yeah, I do some of that, and basically I just write NBA stuff and college basketball stuff. It's not that exciting. It doesn't really need a fancy title.
Nah, it's exciting.
It's fancy enough. Dude, we're fancy.
You're living the dream. I mean, on some level, I mean, people, there's so many people. It is crazy how many people write about basketball now, like what the internet has done and like where the prestige, like, parts of it are. But I would imagine there are like thousands and thousands and thousands of people who would love to have that title. So congrats.
Thank you.
I think cat videos have been replaced by like basketball blogs.
Yes.
In there.
Yeah.
In there.
They're
like
two separate empires, really.
Yeah.
I think they're competing empires. I think there's a war coming.
Ricky,
cat videos and basketball blogs.
Ricky, there is somebody eventually who is going to make one thing that encompasses them both, and I'm hoping that's your next step. Is like the is only cats playing basketball, pretty much. So I mean, this has to be an exciting draft time, like given that you write about both college and pro, draft time has to be a pretty, like, I guess, exciting time for you, I would imagine, in general, yeah?
Yeah, I was at the Final Four. It was the first time I covered the Final Four, so that was pretty cool, being able to see a lot of these guys up close for the first time, watching them in a live setting. I was also at the Draft Combine and got to speak to a few guys. That's always a nice event because there's really good media availability there. It's a nice chance just to be able to pick their brains on the last college season and what they're doing to gear up for the draft. So it's been good.
Yeah, we know that like Ricky's a Bulls fan, but I think a semi-believer in the process.
For sure.
Over here.
I love the process.
Great. Good to hear. But so Hinkie believes very strongly in the interview process and in getting as much information through talking to the prospects as possible. Which guys that you talked to that you felt like had a real handle on things and just talking to them boosted their your opinion of them?
You know, the one guy who had that effect on me, and I didn't talk to everyone, but of the guys who I did talk to, I thought Stanley Johnson was really impressive.
Yeah.
Just the sense that like Stanley Johnson believes in himself to such a great extent that it's hard not to believe him when he talks about how good he thinks he is. And of course, like you look at Stanley Johnson, that dude has basically like what happened in Arizona last year was the closest he's ever come to like mild failure. He was a guy who won 4 state titles in high school. He was always just like the dude, you know, he was always like this prodigy type of talent. And now he's a guy who's going to go, you know, either 9, 10, or 11 in this draft. And I think it really spooked how deep sort of the second, like sort of the back part of the lottery is. I think to get guys like a Trey Lyles or a Miles Turner at, you know, and Stanley Johnson at 9, 10, 11, that just speaks to this draft being a little deeper than even last year's, which is probably more highly touted, I think.
Well,
yeah, I saw Stanley Johnson at Adidas Nations last year, and he had like high socks and like a really cool backpack, and I was like, I'm in. Like, I'm so in. That's all I needed.
Oh,
good to go.
Speaking of really cool backpacks, so I flew back from Seattle on Sunday and I had a layover in Chicago. I had to get on another plane in Chicago and Robert Covington was on my plane in Chicago and he had a pretty fucking awesome backpack. It was a denim backpack with like studs all over it. It was like, it was the dream backpack for like a 16-year-old girl or an NBA player. It was a great backpack. So,
and you talked to him.
I did. Well, I was nervous. It's so weird. So I'm pushing 40. I grew up around this stuff. So I've met like a bazillion athletes, but there are some guys that like, I'm such a, like, I love Covington. Like Mike knows, I love Covington. Like, so the guys on the current Sixers right now that I wouldn't know how to handle are Roten and Covington. I didn't know what to do. So everyone was like, I tweeted at him, "You're on my plane," and he was like, "Maybe," and I was like, "All right, buddy, you're on my plane." And so people started saying, "Sit next to him." We were on Southwest. You could sit wherever you wanted, and there were 2 open seats next to Covington. And I just like I couldn't be that guy. So as I walk by him, I go, "Bob," and he just looks at me, and I go, "Big fan, man." And I put out the fist for the pound, and then that was it. That was the whole conversation. But he did have a great backpack. That was the back. So. Ricky, I guess just again with the about the interview process and Stanley Johnson specifically, how is it going to feel for you seeing Jimmy Butler in a Sixers uniform?
Just hearing you say those words makes me want to cry, to be honest, because people think the Bulls have a lot going for them, but really they just have Jimmy Butler and hopefully Nikola Mirotic. I'm optimistic enough on Mirotic that I'll put him in that mix, but You know, the Bulls, like, rolling long-term, it's pretty much just Jimmy Butler, so I definitely would be heartbroken to see him in the Sixers uniform.
Well, he's restricted, though, right? I mean, he ain't going anywhere.
Yeah, restricted. So.
But a real question about Stanley Johnson, actually mentioning, given that you were at the Final Four, so I keep... I've pretty famously said that I don't watch very much, if at all, college basketball. All of my draft prep is watching YouTube videos. So when I watch Stanley Johnson and I watch Justice Winslow, I can't tell, like, in my visually, I think Stanley Johnson is better, and everyone tends to tell me that it was Justice Winslow's, like, you know, tournament run that is the trump card between the two. How do you see those two versus each other?
Yeah, I mean, they are pretty similar players. If you look at them, like, Stanley Johnson is just, like, Justice Winslow is huge for a college player. Stanley Johnson is huge for, like, any age adult, and he just turned 19 years old. Like, I think there was one two-guard in the NBA who weighed 240 pounds last year. That was Joe Johnson. Stanley Johnson did that as an 18-year-old in Arizona. So that's just to give you an idea of just the type of type of physical tools he's working with.
But he's not fat. He's not fat.
He could beat up a lot of people in the NBA. Let's just say that. He's grown man strong, not just like strong for a college freshman or whatever. But to get back to Winslow versus Johnson, like, they are very similar players, I think. I think both of them sort of project as 3-and-D guys. Winslow is a guy who, from the first time I saw him, I immediately thought of Jimmy Butler. Obviously, that comparison got a lot more flattering as the year went on, because Jimmy Butler wasn't that good a year ago, and now Jimmy Butler's pretty great. But, you know, Kawhi Leonard is probably, like, the ideal of that sort of idea, the model of the 3-and-D player. And I think that both of those guys project pretty similar. Winslow, no doubt, made himself some money in the NCAA tournament. The game against Utah, which was probably Duke's toughest test until the national championship, maybe even just as much so as the national championship, he took over that game. He had like 21 points. He just did not miss. He was a freight train in transition. He was all over the glass. And that was a game where Utah really didn't have anyone to match up with him. Utah ran like a three-guard lineup. They had some 6'3 dudes on the wings who could shoot threes and stuff, but they had no one who was going to step in front of Justice Winslow on a fast break and slow him down even a little bit. And that's just the type of game that he took over, whereas Stanley Johnson in the tournament, he had a pretty poor finish. He was poor against Wisconsin in the Elite Eight loss. He just never seemed to really find his rhythm. So I think that while they have a lot of the same physical tools, Winslow's production and Duke's run to the national championship was just more impressive, and I think that that's why he's a few spots ahead of Johnson in the draft process right now.
Yeah, I would say the major difference between them is Justice is probably better in transition, and I think Stanley's probably better in the half court, or projects better in the half court. And it just sort of depends on what kind of offense you want to run. But I think the people that separate them, like, to be like, oh, Justice is maybe as high as 3 on some people's boards, and Stanley's like closer to 10, I think that's a mistake.
Yeah, again, I think it's just that there's this top 10, top 11 is pretty solid, I think. And there's just not a lot separating two players like that. Like, Justice Winslow shot 42% from 3, and Stanley Johnson shot 37% from 3. There's just, like, small variables in that they can shift someone's perception on, you know, whether or not you're a top 5 pick or a top 10 pick. So, in Johnson, I feel like, might have a reputation as a better defender, but really both of these guys are going to be very solid wing defenders. They should, you know, you don't want to say that they should be ready from the time they step in the NBA when they, you know, were graduating high school a year ago at this time, but they do seem to have the mindset and the ability and the physical tools to be able to defend at an NBA level early in their career.
Have you watched a lot of Moutier?
Yeah, I saw Moutier at the McDonald's All-American game. That's another event I cover every year because it's in Chicago. So I saw him last year in person. He was pretty impressive, and I have seen some of his highlights from China, too. He's definitely a good prospect.
Listen, if you don't go to China and watch them, then we really don't need to hear your opinion, Rick.
Yeah, yeah, come on.
It's only Hinky, right? Hinky's the only one who went there to see him?
Yeah. Well,
he's racking up the freaking flyer miles over there.
You know, that guy is frequent flyer. He's the only guy flying from wherever the hell Porzingis is to wherever the hell Moutier is over and over again. Yeah.
He was actually roommates with Porzingis. Which is the truth. That's how close he's with him.
How would you, the one of the debates amongst Sixers fans is the Moutier versus Russell thing. Where are you on that?
Okay. So as much as I like the top eight in this draft, I would say Moutier is sort of the one guy who scares me. Like, if I'm choosing between Moutier and Russell, I would favor Russell. And I know that a lot of people have differing opinions on that, and I totally get the reason for it. But I just feel like there's such an emphasis on shooting. And in Russell, you have a guy who's, what, a 42% three-point shooter on a high volume of attempts. He took like six or seven attempts a game at Ohio State this year, whereas Moutier was a 57% free throw shooter. And to me, like, you know, you don't need to be a great shooter to be a great NBA guard. John Wall has never been a great shooter, and he straight up dominates. D Rose, very similar. He's always been a poor 3-point shooter, but he, you know, of course, he still had a great career when he was healthy. Moutier sort of projects as a similar type of power guard, but there's a fine line there between being the next John Wall, or, you know, another comparison people have thrown out for Moutier too is Tyreke Evans. Now, Tyreke Evans is a good player, but, you know, probably not someone you want to invest your third pick in. So Moutier's inability to shoot does scare me a little bit. Now, he is extremely athletic. He's definitely more athletic than Russell. There's no doubt about that. I don't quite think he's on the John Wall, D Rose level, though, in terms of speed and power and all that. But, you know, defensive potential, certainly Moutier, I think, has the edge over Russell, no doubt about it. Really, the one thing Russell has on him is sort of the creativity and, shooting ability, no doubt. And I think that gives him a pretty sizable edge just in terms of the way the game is going nowadays.
Yeah, that's where I'd land also. I was Moutier for a while because it just seemed like had a higher like superstar potential, had a higher just ability because he's stronger to like to bully guards and break out in transition and use his athleticism. But in watching him more, like the athleticism doesn't jump out to me as much as I would like it to for how poor of a shooter he is. I don't think the shot's broken, but you know, guys don't get. He's not going to become a tremendous shooter in the NBA. Like Russell is already going to be a very good shooter in the NBA, and because the athleticism is a difference, while it's not like as stark as I thought it was initially, I have Russell higher. And plus, defensively is a big deal. But when you have Nerlens Noel and Joel Embiid behind you, your point guard, you kind of just want him to be okay. Like you're all right with him not being a stud defender at this point, I think.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say is that in terms of how Philadelphia is built, like they really can't afford to not have shooting out of their backcourt if they're going to run the two-post system with Noel and Embiid playing at the same time. I have no idea if that's what they intend to do long-term or short-term, but if that is the build of the roster, you really can't afford to have no shooting out of the backcourt. And so Russell just fills in perfectly there. And like you said, if Noel and Embiid are on the court at the same time, that's going to be just mad shot blocking. So you're always going to have someone behind you. And, you know, Russell's got a 6'10 wingspan. Russell essentially has the size of a big two guard with the skills of a point guard. So I think there's a lot of like there. And, you know, if he's not Andrew Wiggins level athlete or even a Moutier level athlete, you know, it's not like Russell's like slow by any means. We saw last year for Ohio State, he was still he can still score in transition and beat people off the dribble and do more than just be a catch and shoot guy. So I think he would fit with Philadelphia needs.
Yeah, I think he's, you know, Chris Paul and his athletic ability. I feel like that's not an unreasonable.
Ooh. Sure. Chris Paul's off. I mean, I know one isn't 19 and one is, but Chris Paul's awfully strong, you know, like I don't know that. I mean, he's not like a Zach LaVine type of athlete, but he is a strong dude, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
I think the one thing about point guard defense is, and I don't know if this is if this has ever been written about or quantified, but, like, I just get this sense with point guards that nobody can guard anybody anyway, and that's at least at that position. So point guard defense is, like, even the worst, some of the best point guards seem to be horrible at defense anyway. Like, Tony Parker's horrible, Kyrie Irving's horrible. There are plenty of point guards. It just seems like a position where if you can have a bad defender somewhere, it doesn't seem horrible to have one there.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. But, you know, those things always get exposed in the playoffs, man. And yeah. You just look at Damian Lillard, and I love watching Damian Lillard play, but yeah. Watching him defend in the playoffs is like, this dude is no chance.
Yeah, he doesn't even try, though. You know what I mean? Like, right. Which is, you know, at this point in his career, he should be trying, but he doesn't even try.
And the thing about Russell is, like, when you have arms that long, and, like, let's say you have B athleticism and not A-plus athleticism, like, he's still quick enough and he's got the reach advantage that he has no reason to be a poor defender. He should be, right. like, an average to slightly above average defender, I would say, whereas, you know, Moutier, maybe he turns into a monster defensively, but it's the same thing. Like, you know, Moutier might not be always engaged on the defensive end too. That's something that's tough for us to project, not seeing him up close in China and all that. So Russell should be fine defensively, I think. Like, I don't think that he's going to be a glaring hole defensively at all.
So what would your team in specific top five be?
In this draft. So yeah. I think Towns for sure is number one. I think that that's pretty much a slam dunk. Okafor, I'm biased for because I've been watching him since he was a junior in high school. He's from Chicago. He went to Whitney Young High School here. So I want to love Jahlil Okafor, but he just, I mean, I'm not saying anything here that everyone doesn't already know, but he's really like a basketball player from 1992, right? Not from 2015. Yeah. I think he would have been awesome in 1992. And now that it's 2015, like, maybe you don't need a 280-pound dude who plays no defense and who you need to, like, halt the entire offense just to get him a post touch. Right. Despite the fact that he's amazing at low post offense and all that. So Okafor, I would go back and forth. I guess I'd probably have him too, just because center is the hardest position to find. And then, like, you just hope you pair him with a rim protecting power forward. That's a very rare, unique player to find. But, you know, that's the hope at least. I would put Russell three. I think Russell's shooting ability, his creativity is something that no other perimeter player in this class can match. And then four, I would have Winslow, I think. Just the way Winslow played in the tournament was really eye-opening. And he has all the tools, too. I mean, he was a guy who people said coming into college as a top high school player, they didn't think he'd be able to shoot at all. I mean, he shot 42% from three-point range. I'm not sure if that's completely sustainable. He was a guy who mostly did it on catch-and-shoots. But Kawhi Leonard does it on catch-and-shoots, too. You don't need to be schooling dudes off the dribble the way Steph Curry or D'Angelo Russell does. To be a good shooter in the NBA. Five is a toss-up. I would almost say Cauley-Stein, just because, again, like, if you can get a center who's going to be so good in the high pick and roll, be able to, you know, run the floor basket to basket and give you elite level defense out of the center position. Obviously, Hinkie has this covered because he's talked about, you know, the emphasis on rim protection, how that's such a tough quality to find. I go back to that Knicks season, I think it was 2 years ago, when Tyson Chandler got hurt. The Knicks were coming off their 54-win season.
Yeah.
Tyson Chandler got hurt, and suddenly the Knicks realized literally no one else on that entire roster could play interior defense, and they lost, like, every game. Like, interior defense is extremely important, and if you draft Willie Cauley-Stein, you're going to have interior defense. So I would probably have him five.
That makes sense. Spike's salty right now that he didn't put Hazonia anywhere.
Yeah, I like Hazonia. Yeah, I like Hazonia. But I do like Hazonia a lot. I was going back and forth on that five spot between Cauley-Stein and Hazonia. He's a guy who, I mean, I'm sure that you guys have probably even watched more tape on him than I have, but he seems like he could be a star, potentially, just watching the YouTube videos, which is, of course, the go-to scouting method.
That's right. That's right.
In 2015.
So I'm looking at, like, the mid-first round, and I see especially two spots specifically where I think you're going to see teams looking to trade out and maybe pick up a veteran or just trade out because they don't need anybody. And I'm looking at 12 and 13 with the Jazz and the Suns. I think that they both want to get sort of veterans in there and not, no, I mean, like, they both have a ton of young guys that they need to develop. So what's the point of another one? Who do you like in that sort of mid first round area that you think maybe is undervalued?
That's an interesting spot, because to me, I think there's like 11 really good players in this draft, and I would put Trey Lyles as sort of that 11th guy. I'm higher on Trey Lyles than a lot of people are. If he was available at, you know, 12, 13, 14, wherever in that range, I would take him for sure. I think that he's a guy who's going to be really good eventually. He was a top, you know, top five, I think, high school recruit, playing out of position in a system with, you know, two post players at Kentucky. Everyone knows now, I think, that Towns can shoot, but he only attempted like 8 3-pointers all of last year. Calipari really wanted him to stay inside. So when you have Cauley-Stein and Towns, like, there's just not going to be a lot of room for a wing there, especially a natural power forward move to the wing like Lyles. I don't think he was really put in the best position to be able to show what he can do. But at the same time, like, you know, you can judge a guy by more than like his per game stats and all that if you look into the context of what went into the situation. And to me, I think Trey Lyles is going to be really good. He's a guy who can simultaneously hit a catch and shoot jumper and someone who can take you down in the post and score. He's got NBA size immediately, which is the first thing that jumps out. I want to say he's like 250 pounds, about 6'10". So he's just a big dude. And if he was available in that range, I would take him for sure. The 12th guy, you know, after Lyles, I would be tempted to take a chance on Oubre, even though I wouldn't feel – I mean, I don't feel like Oubre is a lock, no doubt. If you're talking an instant impact guy, I would be scared to take Oubre. But let's remember, like, all these dudes are in high school a year ago. I talked to Kelly Oubre at the McDonald's All-American game a year ago, and now, you know, he's going through the draft process right now. And, yeah, I think even some of them are just sort of like – even at that age, they're caught up in just how fast everything has happened. You're not drafting Kelly Oubre to be the best player in the 2016 season. If he turns into one of the better players in the 2021 season when he's 24 or 25, like, that's really what you're going for, I think, with Kelly Oubre. And if you're playing the long game, he has all of the measurables that you would look for. He's a guy who has the athleticism to win a dunk contest, the shooting stroke to win a three-point contest, and great size for his position too, at 6'7", with like a 7'2 or 7'3 wingspan. So that's a guy who, just based on physical tools alone, I would think about taking a chance on at 12 or 13.
Yeah, he's a sneaky good rebounder too. People don't talk about that as much.
Yeah,
Oubre, great on YouTube as well. Great. That was one of the guys I told Mike early on. Love that guy on YouTube.
I look at Trey Lyles, and I don't really see a huge position for him. I think if you look at him as a four, then it's like, well, why wouldn't you take Bobby Portis over him? Why wouldn't you take a guy with more of like an actual skill set? I look at Trey Lyles and I just sort of see like maybe like a little less than an Ed Davis. I think he's like, I just don't see anyone that's really going to contribute at a high level. And if you're going to do that, then like get somebody with a motor or somebody with like some marketable skill. Then I just don't see one of those in Trey Lyles. So I have him closer to like 20, 25.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's the one thing about Lyles, is he's a bit more of, like, I guess I want to say that, like, he has a variety of skills that you would think could come together that hopefully translate at the NBA level. Whereas, you know, Portis could be a guy like – Portis, to me, his floor is probably a third big who can alternate between power forward and center, who can give you very good defense and something on offense. To me, that's a player similar to Taj Gibson, just in terms of what they're bringing to the table. And Taj Gibson's amazing. Like, to have Taj Gibson on your team rules. I can say that for sure over the last few years. So, you know, Portis is another guy, too, who I'd put in that mix.
What do you think?
Talk about,
oh, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
No,
well,
you,
I was
Mike.
Gonna go to, I was going to go to Robert Upshaw, who is center out of Washington that Ricky wrote about a little bit ago as well.
Yeah, Upshaw, I mean, I like Upshaw because you just don't see players that big and that talented available in the 20s of the draft. He had like 85 blocks in 19 games or something ridiculous like that. He was averaging 4.5 blocks a game. And he did not detail what his problems were at Washington. So, I mean, it's tough to project. Like, if the guy is really an alcoholic, that's a serious issue. But that's something that, you know, at 21, you would think that hopefully with the right people around him, he can overcome. Also, like, he is only 21. So did he get busted for underage drinking? Was that, like, sort of the issue? There's a lot of ways you can go with it. And it really feels wrong to even focus on his off the court issues too much when we don't know what the problem was.
Right.
On the court, I look at him like Hassan Whiteside. Like, Whiteside played the single most dominant game against the Bulls I've seen in the last few years. He had a triple double against the Bulls with like 12 blocks in like 25 minutes this year in a game this winter, where every time he was on the court, it's like the game was over. You have Hassan Whiteside, and there's nothing the Bulls can do about it. I think Upshaw has a similar type of skill set because he's so long. He has like a 7'8" wingspan or something crazy like that. Really good athleticism. And if he projects similar to Cauley Stein in the sense that, you know, you're probably not going to feed him the ball offensively. He's more going to be a guy who sets picks. If you're in an up-tempo system, he's going to be able to keep up with everyone. He has the athleticism to do that. High pick and roll, read and react type of offense. Man, Whiteside can be awesome because he can anchor a defense if he's really engaged and if he has his life in order. So I would be very tempted to take a chance on Robert Upshaw just because you don't see the ability to get a starting caliber center in the 20s in a draft very often. Really, the only way that's going to happen is if the dude is a screw up off the court, which unfortunately for him has been the story for him up to this point.
Well, along those lines, how do you feel thinking about Jimmy Butler in a Sixers uniform?
No, I can't do it.
Sorry,
I just can't do it.
Well, Mike, if you have one more, then we
got
to wrap up.
I got
up.
One more.
Okay,
I got one more. Out of the four sort of mid to late first round point guards, Cameron Payne, Jerian Grant, Tyus Jones, and Delon Wright, where do you sort of order them, and who do you like best projecting forward?
You know, I think I like Jerian Grant the best, even though he's the oldest, which is tricky because, I mean, it's tough to compare Tyus Jones to Jerian Grant because Tyus Jones is, like, young enough to be Jerian Grant's son at this point, right? He's, like, a little baby compared to
Jerian
Grant.
If he had him at three,
but,
sure, yeah.
Yeah. Jerian Grant's shooting really fell off as a senior. He went from a 40% three-point shooter to a 30% three-point shooter, which is think, but something similar happened to RJ Hunter this last year at Georgia State, and I think everyone knows RJ Hunter can just shoot the ball extremely well. I get the same sense that Grant can too. He had so much attention on him defensively for Notre Dame. He was the whole hub of that offense. He had to do everything, and then they basically surrounded him with shooters so that people couldn't triple team him every game. I just like Grant's combination of size and skill and athleticism too, really. I think he's definitely a above average NBA athlete for the position. In a 6'5 point guard, he's a guy who can alternate between the one and the two. He's a good passer. He averaged over 6 assists a game the last 2 years. And while his 3-point fall off as a senior, I think he has the type of range that you look for out of an NBA guard and that you can bank on. Now, like Cameron Payne and Tyus Jones, for as talented as they are, they're just never going to be, you know, 6'5", 210-pound point guards. You know, no matter, you know, even in a few years when they reach Jerian Grant's age, they're just not going to have the same build as him. And I don't know if they're going to have the same athleticism as him, too. Like, Grant's athleticism is probably superior to Payne's or to Jones. So I'd put Grant 1 in that group. Second, I don't know, it's tough because I love Delon Wright, but he seems like a guy to me who will never be able to shoot. He's a guy who does everything well but shoot. But I look at his jumper at Utah, and he was not a guy who jumped out where it's like, oh, yeah, he'll be able to fix that in a few years. It's probably like, nah, this is what you're getting. Someone who defends well, who passes well, who makes things happen in transition, who can finish at the rim, but who's never going to beat you with his jump shot. And it's just tough to have that deficiency out of a guard in the way the game's going right now. So I think because of that, I might put Tyus Jones 2, I guess. And then I'll go Campaign 3 and Delon Wright 4. I do think they're all first-round talents. I wish I got to see Payne play more. Murray State, their season ended in, like, horrific fashion twice, basically. Yeah. They dominated the Ohio Valley Conference. They were supposed to get into the NCAA tournament. Everyone was excited to watch Cameron Payne play because of that. And then they lose in the semifinals, I think, of the conference tournament on a last-second shot. Then they lose on, a half-court shot in the NIT. So basically a team that had a ton of success. Cameron Payne was putting up 20 points every game. And then a national stage just never really got to see him because of the way the season ended. So it's tough to say, to really give a definitive ranking without watching a player like Payne go through workouts. But, you know, to me, I'd put Grant number one. Jones is just a shot maker. I think that he probably compares pretty favorably to Tyler Enos, which I'm sure people listening to this podcast are like, yo, Tyler Enos didn't do anything last year. Why should we be excited about that? But I think he's just a better shot maker and a guy who's going to have the offense under control.
Yeah.
He seems like a backup defend. He seems like a good backup point guard, I would say.
Yeah. But there aren't many backup point guards in the NBA that you're like, all right, thank God we have him. Right? It seems like it's sort of a useless position.
There's probably more backup point guards than any other position in basketball. It's the easiest thing to find.
And they all suck. And none of them are good. So
besides for Grievous Basket.
Sure.
I want Jerry and Grant for the Jeremy and Jerry and fun times.
I want them to draft Jerry and Grant and then trade Jeremy Grant in the most that would be such a mean the national press would have and the local press would have a hilarious time with that. So
it'd be great for Hinkie.
Yes, it would.
That'd be a Maury-like move.
Really. Yes. Well, cut from the same cloth, right?
Yeah.
You can follow Ricky on Twitter at @SBN_Ricky. And you read his stuff at SBNation.com @SBN_Ricky. Thank you. Thanks for coming on, dude.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Ricky on the Ricky. Ricky on the Ricky.
Groundbreaking podcast.
Thanks, buddy. Thank you. Ricky was good.
Yeah, he's great. He's a very sweet guy.
Yeah. All right. I got to end. We'll have to do two jigsaws next time. I got to get out of here.
All right, buddy. The 76th Ricky.
It was amazing. We had Ricky on the Ricky for the 76th one. It's fitting.
It was historic. All right. We'll have to do something for the 100th.
176?
I'm thinking 100th. We'll put Philip on it.
Live Ricky, and nobody will be able to hear it at the bar. It'll be great.
Perfect. So that's what we'll do.
All right, see you, man.
All right, man. See ya. Like I said, hold your head, son. Don't take a second. Check it out.